This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And now, an appreciation of the most important American historical figure that the average person knows least about. So, Meghna, give our listeners a hint, because this person left a body of work that can be seen all around Boston to this day.
Okay, so here's the hint. He was an accomplished journalist who co-founded The Nation magazine.
And yet, he's best known for something else.
He was also an accomplished sailor, an author, and land surveyor.
And yet, he's best known for something else.
He provided a system of battlefield care during the Civil War that would eventually become the Red Cross.
Very impressive, and yet, he's best known for something else.
He was one of the country's first environmentalists.
Now we're getting closer to what he's famous for.
And the country's first landscape architect.
In fact, he invented the term landscape architect.
And he designed Central Park in New York, and here in Boston, the Back Bay Fens, Franklin Park, and the Emerald Necklace.
Bingo. Of course, we're talking about Frederick Law Olmsted, and he's the subject of a new biography by Justin Martin. He's the guy who said, Olmsted may be the most important American historical figure that the average person knows least about. Why?
I think it has to do with the fact that he did a number of things well, and people like to sort of boil people down to one grand achievement, perhaps being president of the United States or being a writer or what have you. He was somebody who actually was obviously very accomplished in the area he's remembered it for, which is landscape architecture. But had he not become a landscape architect, he would have been well remembered as a journalist. So he was someone who did several things very well, and it makes it a little bit hard to kind of boil him down.
Justin Martin's new biography is called The Genius of Place, The Life of Frederick Law Olmsted. And we caught up with him recently in the Back Bay Fens, which was designed by Olmsted, to talk about the central idea that inspired his work.
I'd say the central idea was an appreciation for nature, a naturalistic aesthetic. And the thing that's interesting is he often achieved that through very, very interventionist means. I mean, he used a lot of gunpowder and dredging and what have you to create very natural-looking landscapes, such as the Back Bay Fens in Boston, which appears a natural landscape, but was one that really required all kinds of engineering. It was a very serious engineering challenge.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that landscape. We're standing in the Back Bay Fens, pretty much right across the road from the Museum of Fine Arts. As we look around, what characteristics might we see that reflect Olmsted?
What you'd see that reflects Olmsted is, first of all, a nice kind of sinuous stream that was originally just a fetid, garbage-strewn plain. And he actually wanted to turn it back into a salt marsh. And he also designed and literally dredged a stream that kind of flowed in a nice curving fashion. It was actually more natural than nature in a way.
And of course, this extends. I guess it wasn't known as the Emerald Necklace, right, during his day, but it became something that really defined big swaths of Boston, right?
Very much. No, he ended up cobbling together a whole series of parks, and very different parks, like Jamaica Pond was a glacial kettle hole that he turned into a park. There's the Muddy River Improvement, which was another sort of waterway that he turned into a park. There's Franklin Park. So he cobbled together all these elements. Olmsted was great at coming up with names. He was excellent in nomenclature, and so he dreamed up the Jeweled Girdle. This one was not a winner. He had many winners. In fact, Fens, Back Bay Fens was one he came up with. Jeweled Girdle was not one that stuck, and somebody along the way came up with the one that did stick, which is Emerald Necklace.
A little less racy, perhaps. The Emerald Necklace. Of course, he's famous for the design of Central Park in New York City. Talk a little bit about how he got that commission, because it wasn't straightforward, was it? I mean, it wasn't sort of like, here's a guy with all the credentials in the world, and it makes absolute sense that he's the guy who should design Central Park.
Not in the least. In fact, what happened was he was working as a journalist. He lost his journalism job due to a terrible economic cataclysm, what came to be known as the Panic of 1857. He took an extremely modest job. He was clearing the land. He was knocking down shanties and draining swamps to prepare it for someone else's design. But then through a great series of kind of coincidences and behind-the-scenes machinations, Olmsted got the opportunity to come up with a design to replace that original design. It was considered rather amateurish, and he brought all these incredible ideas to the fore at that point.
What were the ideas that reflect Olmsted's vision that make Central Park what it is to this day?
I guess first and foremost was he had an idea of doing a naturalistic park, again, as he did in Boston with Emerald Necklace, and this is rooted in the idea that if you had what I call an imperial park, where you'd be passing through grand archways. But Olmsted felt that would be a constant reminder of people's lowly station as they pass through the park, whereas a natural park would belong to everyone. Nature belongs to everyone. There would not be any grand fountains and archways to remind people of their shortcomings in life.
So there really was this idea, this almost unity between the design of landscape and social order, in his view.
He very much liked the idea that Central Park would be a place, and all of his park creations would be places where people could meet and mingle people from all different backgrounds, and that was really what his designs were intended to do. They were intended to sort of promote this as opposed to celebrate great generals or political leaders or what have you.
You know, one of the central ideas of the environmental movement is the protection of open space. He was really a pioneer in that regard as well.
He became very aware that a lot of natural landscapes such as Yosemite and Niagara Falls were under siege. And because of his background as a journalist, he started mounting these kind of public education campaigns where he'd communicate to his fellow journalists that places like Niagara Falls or Yosemite were in danger. And then they would dutifully report this and help disseminate the idea that these places need to be preserved. And also help disseminate the idea, he was a very early person to call for this, that it should be the government that should step in and preserve these places.
What would he think of Niagara Falls today? I took a trip not long ago, passed through Niagara Falls, and I was sort of appalled by the kind of development there is on both sides of the falls.
Niagara Falls is a challenging one in terms of what Olmsted would think today, because when he started calling for it to be preserved, it was already at that point, unlike Yosemite, it was already the number one tourist destination in the United States, and it was already just choked with industry, all kinds of flumes and paper mills along the banks. There were barkers wandering around, trying to lure people to the best views. There was the Great Blondin, this acrobat would cross the gorge beneath the falls on a tight wire. So it was a very circus-like and also industrial environment. Through his good efforts, in large part, that was removed. But of course, so you actually do have an unimpeded view of the falls today, which is very nice. But of course, you look up, and that illusion is quickly broken by all the development on either side. So I guess it's a mixed bag, and he'd probably view it as such.
But his influence still there, in the sense that you have this unimpeded view of this spectacular natural resource.
Absolutely. If it hadn't been for his intervention and some of the people he teamed up with, you'd probably have industry there, and you'd probably also have to pay some outrageous amount of money to stand on a little tiny spit of land and take your turn viewing the falls as people did in that era.
Now, I want to ask you, what drew you to him?
I was drawn by, part of it was just like so many Americans, just the parks were part and parcel of my life. I felt very intertwined with you know, in my case, Central Park, which I just spent so much time in as a New Yorker. The more I learned about him, the more interesting he became, and the more I recognized this is a person that, you know, there's so many interesting angles and so much to be explored, basically.
Now, you've also written biographies of Alan Greenspan, who you describe as the man behind the money, and about Ralph Nader, crusader, spoiler, and icon. Does Olmsted have anything in common with these two characters?
He very much does. What he has in common with them is he's a late bloomer, as they were, and he's someone who did a variety of different things before he really kind of found his way. Alan Greenspan, people may not know, was a professional jazz musician and also a part of Ayn Rand, the writer's inner circle. Ralph Nader was an accomplished writer for writing Unsafe at Any Speed, an accomplished lawyer, and ultimately people remember him as a consumer advocate and then a many times interfering presidential candidate. But he was another example, like Olmsted, of someone who did many different things and in some cases did them well.
That's Justin Martin. He's the author of Genius of Place, The Life of Frederick Law Olmsted.
Anthony, that was a very cool interview. And actually, I understand that Olmsted's influence and involvement with Boston extends beyond the Emerald Necklace.
Oh, very much so. His house in Brookline is still standing. And there's a sad and sort of ironic postscript here. Olmsted, among other things, submitted designs for the grounds of McLean Psychiatric Hospital in Belmont. And by the end of his life, he was actually a patient there. Oh. And Justin Martin says that when he checked into the mental institution, he took one look around and declared, "Confound them, they didn't follow my plan." Those were among his last reported words.
Oh, well, you can see some great photographs and read an excerpt from the biography at our website, radioboston.org.